Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 AM WKOK. Welcome to the show. This is Todd Hummel. Let's see what happened this weekend. I'm sure you got a chance to watch the NFL playoffs. Last night's was real fun when the Bills and the Chiefs played. I saw some interesting discourse online today that kind of putting the blame on that loss on Josh Allen, and I was a little stunned by that just because, it looked like to me, Chris Jones late in the game pushed the left tackle right back into Josh Allen when he had the receiver open in the end zone, and it left the pass short. And I see a lot of people kind of saying that, Stephon Diggs was wide open on that crossing route across the middle. But Josh Allen didn't get to be Josh Allen without being aggressive. And that play was open. And, I feel like if the left tackle holds that block for another half beat or two and is able to keep the pocket clean for that little bit of time, that's a touchdown. And we might be having a different conversation today. But, of course, Patrick Mahomes still would have gotten the ball back and with a chance to win. And, let's talk a little bit about Patrick Mahomes right now. I'm sure people have a little bit of fatigue, kind of like they get with Tom Brady, because Tom Brady was one of the top quarterbacks for so long. And Patrick Mahomes, of course, since, I was going to say his rookie year, but I guess it was his first year starting, wasn't quite his rookie year. But they've gone to the AFC Championship game in every year that Patrick Mahomes has started at quarterback. And to think about that as only a 27-year-old, and he's been to 7 AFC Championship games. I think I saw his 13 playoff wins is tied with Ben Roethlisberger and Brett Favre already for career playoff wins. He and Travis Kelce now have the career record for touchdown passes between a quarterback and a tight end in NFL playoff history with, I believe it's 17 now, might be 16. So that's pretty impressive as well. And, right now that sets up a big AFC Championship game. Good luck picking a winner in that one. The Ravens are playing as well as anybody in the league. That second half, if you got, if you watch that film on the Ravens at the second half, I bet that's pretty scary. I think they were feeling a little bit of the pressure being the one seed and having that week off in the first half on Saturday afternoon against the Texans, but they did a great job of bouncing back in the second half. And I think the thing I'm most interested to see is what Mike McDonald, the Ravens defensive coordinator, comes up with against Patrick Mahomes. I don't think any assistant coach has been having a better season this year than the defensive coordinator for the Ravens. And it's going to be interesting to see. It's fun to see how good the Chiefs can be when the receivers actually catch passes. That was big yesterday as well, of course. Kelce dropped two, I believe, against Miami, and they really struggled at times this season between, MVS, Valtez Scantling, and the guy that they got from the Giants. And you haven't seen Kadarius Toney at all. At least I haven't noticed him in these first two playoff games. But MVS played real well yesterday. Like I said, Patrick Mahomes. And going back to the Bills, there's two things. Like I said to open the show, I was really stunned with, just how, kind of the discourse today about how laying it at the feet of Josh Allen. I guess maybe the fumbled run, but Dalton Kincaid made a great play to make sure the Bills have the ball, and give them a chance to win the game. You know, it's hard to put, you know, it's hard to put everything on the kicker. That was a long kick, cold weather. I believe, you know, I'm sure the Bills wanted to be a little more efficient and get it a little closer and try and score a touchdown there. But again, you know, they were unable to, and credit for the Chiefs to be able to run out the clock and get the victory. The other game from yesterday, the Lions and the Buccaneers. You gotta love what you see out of the Lions right now. This, you know, there always seems to be that one team of destiny, that one team that has a chance, you know, that feels like it's their year, and it kind of feels like the Lions are that team. Now the big question right now is, you know, can they go out to San Francisco and win? The 49ers, you know, Jordan Love was outstanding until that last pass against the 49ers on Saturday night. And it's really, you know, you watch the 49ers sometimes and they seem like the Super Bowl champs. And then you watch them play on, you know, on Saturday and you feel like they're vulnerable. But, you know, a big thing for them, they were able to, Brock Purdy's best game, but he came up with huge in that drive. And, you know, maybe it's time to talk about, I've always had questions about Brock Purdy, and that might be my Seattle Seahawks bias against the 49ers. But, you know, he keeps answering these questions. He bounces back from, you know, his poor games. You know, the questions on him is can he lead a comeback? He's always good with the lead. He did that on Saturday in a presser situation. And now if they play to their capabilities, I believe that they're a better team than the Detroit Lions. But they don't always reach those capabilities, and it's going to be interesting to see how the Lions, you know, have an answer for the various weapons and on the 49ers offense. You know, Christian McCaffrey and George Kittle, you know, both played well in that game. It's going to be interesting. I believe Kyle Shanahan, I think I saw today Kyle Shanahan had media availability, and they weren't real sure, you know, what they're going to get out of Deebo Samuel this week. They were going to wait for an X-ray. You know, he's so important in the versatility, you know, that he brings, as, you know, they like to move him around in the formation, play him at slot, play him out wide. He'll even run the ball once in a while. So not having him in will be huge if he's not available. I believe that they are the late game on Fox on Sunday night at 6:30. So, you know, I'm sure we'll talk more about the AFC and the NFC championship games coming up this weekend. What else is going on this week? Hall of Fame stuff come out on Tuesday afternoon. Hopefully we'll have, we should have Bob Nightingale on tomorrow at 1:35 to talk a little bit about that. Hopefully for you Phillies fans out there, Chase Utley gets in there. All right, we are going to take our first break right now. We'll be back on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Well, once again, the suit put the house on the line and put everything on the Bills to win. I don't know how that house survives over there with all the times he's put the house on the line and hasn't won. At some point, somebody's going to collect.
He looked like he was right for a little bit.
Yeah, but that's like every staff meeting for a little bit, he looks like he's right. And then all of a sudden, somebody tells him, no, it's actually this way. And then it ends. So, great games. I mean, really, they're all great games over the weekend. What really struck me yesterday is that over and over again, let's take the Buffalo game. We kept hearing about 13 seconds, right? 13 seconds. Right? Like, from the game 3 years ago. Well, okay, that's 3 years ago. You do that in the pregame show. Who cares? You want to know there are a couple keys to that game yesterday. First of all, Tony Romo is right. Getting Kelsey involved, key. Cook being involved for the Bills running game, key. But then what adjustments were made by Kansas City's defense at the second half that took the running game away, which was phenomenal? And what's the part that has plagued the Kansas City offense all season long? What has plagued it?
Drops.
Yep. How many drops did they have yesterday?
I don't remember one.
None. Okay? Was it brought up by anybody?
Not that I know of.
No. But we heard about 13 seconds 120 times. Right? 13 seconds has nothing to do with yesterday's game. Zero. Different teams, maybe the same coaches, same quarterbacks, but it's a different day, different time, different everything. It's about what's going on with this team, and guess what? Right? They didn't drop a pass. Valdes-Scantling, who has been dropping passes left and right, caught everything. Kelce has fought the ball a bit this year, caught everything. And that was a big part of why they won yesterday. In other words, the dropping of passes just crushes the entire rhythm of an offense. The dropping of passes, you know, changes the down and distance part so dramatically. And they didn't do it yesterday. They didn't do it. And suddenly the Kansas City offense looked like the Kansas City offense. And what a difference that makes. And now they get Baltimore next. Baltimore had a great second half, took out Houston. In fact, the Baltimore defense is playing great. I mean, the only touchdown Houston got in Saturday's game was the punt return. I didn't see it. I was still on a plane coming in, but you know, I saw the highlight of it. It was a heck of a return. Lamar Jackson played well. It is amazing. I'm watching Green Bay playing San Francisco. You know, the first thing I thought was, in order to save money, both teams went with rookie kickers. Okay? That should be Robbie Gould out there, who has never missed a postseason kick. Never. As opposed to Jake Moody. Right? Okay? That wasn't Mason Crosby late in the game in the fourth quarter trying to increase the Packer advantage. It was Anders Carlson. Right? Sometimes you can save yourself a couple shekels here and there, and guess what? Right when you need it, you don't have it. And because both guys were, they kicked like rookie kickers in the playoffs. Now, Bass doesn't have that excuse. That's his stadium, his wind. He knows everything about that place, and he just flat out missed it wide right. And then Detroit-Tampa. Tampa played hard, but Detroit is not turning the ball over. And that's been a big part of what they've done in the postseason. They have not turned the ball over. Now, I'm not saying they haven't been close, but they still haven't turned it over. And playing at home, the emotion of it is really that's really a big part of what's going on with their success, because Detroit is really going to struggle with San Francisco in this regard. Detroit's secondary is not a top-tier secondary. And with Kittle, Ayuk, maybe Debo Samuel, Jennings, McCaffrey, that's going to be a problem for them. Because Brock Purdy, when Brock Purdy's going really well, he plays really well. But you don't know when that day is. He has those days where it slides back. And you kind of saw a little bit of the slide back in Green Bay. He really didn't play well. And they got away with it in the game. I mean, there's still moments where Brock Purdy, to his credit, plays like the last pick in the draft, and there are moments where he plays like the first pick in the draft.
I mean, he bounced back to lead that last drive. I was pretty impressed by that. I don't want to say poorly, but, you know, he did not play well in those first until that last drive.
But again, okay, everybody gets enamored with certain things in this sport, the way it's covered, the way it's graded, the whole thing. Like, I've said 1,000 times, right? I know the enormous talent of Nick Bosa, but I don't see it on display all the time. I'm sure Pro Football Focus, instead of grading him out at 100, graded him out at 98. But he was lousy the other night. He was invisible. He finally broke through to get to the quarterback, didn't put his hands up. Nick, put your hands up. It's like fundamental 101 of playing defensive end when, you know, you're not quite getting there. Put your hands up. All right, then put his hands up. Okay, so he didn't play well. I mean, he was invisible almost the entire night. But there's another part, too. Kyle Shanahan. Well, guess what? You know what happened the other night? Right? The world's greatest play caller in the face of the earth? That's the first time in his career his team's been down five in the fourth quarter, five or better, and they came back and won. They've been 0 for 30. 0 for 30. How about that?
He, you know, he's one of those guys that seems like he gets a little it doesn't handle the big moment well. Like, I don't know what they were thinking at the end of the half, playing for, you know, stop being aggressive and playing for a field goal, and then you miss the field goal.
I don't know, especially with a rookie kicker. I mean, I'm sorry, if that's Robbie Gould, I know I'm getting points. But as an organization, and that's John Lynch, not Kyle Shanahan, they elected not to bring Robbie back. Okay, so we're going to go with the younger guy. We're going to save some money. Okay, good for you. All right, and guess what? When you really needed it, you know, how's your bank account? Doing all right? There you go. Perfect. Glad to hear that the company bank account's doing well. But that is... That's the issue that you have in the league when you're trying to, like, work salary cap numbers and so forth. And then all of a sudden you really need it, and you're like, okay. Didn't go well. But again, you know, he's been in the Super Bowl game against Kansas City. Not a good fourth quarter. Okay. Obviously the Super Bowl game when he was the offensive coordinator at Atlanta. We know about the 28-3. Now, the defense let up a lot in that game. That was the biggest issue there. But his offense could have... Look, you get another score in that game, you can probably put New England away. They didn't get it. Couldn't find it. Yet over and over again, we hear over and over and over again that, you know, this guy is the Cadillac of play callers. Okay. Well, I think he's a really good play caller. I really do. I think he's a really good play caller. But, geez, you know... But after a while, I'm the kind of person that sits there and goes, okay, really? He can't be that good. I'm watching the games. I don't feel like I'm seeing anything special, except he's got great talent. I mean, I think most of us could sit there and say, gee, if we get the ball to Samuel, we get the ball to Kittle, and we get the ball to McCaffrey, we got a real shot. I don't think you have to be a Phi Beta Kappa in play calling to figure that out. Do you?
I don't think you need to be a Phi Beta Kappa, period.
Right? I mean, come on. I mean, I respect play callers, and play calling is not easy because you have a short period of time, and you have to sequence things right, and you have to have a feel for it. Do I think he has a feel for it? I always felt he had a good feel for it, but I've had too many people like go overboard about what a awesome play caller he is. I'm like going, okay... all right, I think he does a good job. I mean, he's a good play caller. But, you know, I mean, yeah, he's good. I mean, I don't get blown away by him.
Is he any better than Andy Reid? Probably not.
No. No. You know, but Andy Reid also has been fortunate over the years. Became a better play caller when he had Donovan McNabb. Yeah. He became a better play caller when he had Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it's like that. Remember the conversation I told you I had with Mike McDaniel, the Dolphins coach? And yeah. we were talking about players. And he says, yeah, Steve. He says, when Tua was out, this is a year ago. He said, when Tua was out, he says, we just called a bunch of plays. He said, when Tua got back, I started calling the really good plays again. Now, that's the kind of real... Now, that's realistic. Okay? I mean, personnel means everything. And does he do a good job at taking advantage of the personnel he has? Yes. That makes him an excellent play caller and good at sequencing. But, geez, let's not go overboard here.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Q, it's 11 and 15, almost Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. They'll find every way they can to save you money, critical, especially in these times, and also make sure the key is that you're fully insured. And they'll do that at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. They customer service means everything to them at Purdy Insurance. We're going to have, John Griffin this half hour? Does that sound right?
He's on the line.
He's on the line now. Well, that means he's on this half hour. Well done. John, how are you?
Steve, I'm well, thanks. How about yourself?
Doing well. Thanks for asking. Appreciate it. Well, no, John, obviously, it's a journey through the Patriot. Pros and cons along the way. You want to see growth. What growth are you seeing?
I'm seeing a growth in learning how to win. Quite frankly, yeah. The league season throughout the country right now, all teams are kind of experiencing the same. Some are having more success at the top of the league. Some are battling in the middle, and some are maybe on the wrong side of the ball more often than they'd like to be. And we're in the same world of just trying to learn how to win. I mean, we have I try to help our team and allow them grace in saying that we had three starters game two of the Patriot League Patriot League season here. We played our second game was against American, and I just giving them again just something perspective, something to hang on to, because we lost the game and it was a good competitive battle. We just didn't make enough shots and get enough stops. And three of the starters didn't play in the second game of the Patriot League season last year. So they're gaining invaluable experience in all these close games, and the games that we've lost are, within five possessions, where the ball doesn't bounce away. We don't do what we need to do to give ourselves a chance to win, and that's just experience that is only really gained through being in these opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, that includes the tough overtime game against Lafayette, but you've been splitting weeks. You've been splitting weeks, so it's not like you're not leaving a week empty.
No, we're doing it the non-traditional way. We're losing our home games, win our road games. So.
Yeah, oh yeah. Everybody has their own formula.
What's that? I'm sorry, Steve.
I said everybody has their own formula, John.
Yeah, no doubt.
But that's the crazy part about now. You had back-to-back road games, and this time you got a split out of that, which was a big plus. Would it be safe for me to say, and please correct me, that, look, at this stage, you have a small margin for error. Is that safe?
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, I think right now, I hate to be cliche here, but at this point in the year, any team has a small margin of error. The Patriot League has a lot of parity, a lot of similar-built teams. The scores are close. It's coming down to five possessions or less across the board. And, I think that we are gaining invaluable experience in certain positions. One player, for example, is Noah Williamson, who's coming off a big double-double at Lafayette. And he's growing each and every day. So we do have a small margin of error, but as does everybody. And our margin of errors have changed from really turnovers, which we're not – fortunately for us, we're not turning it over as much, to now defensive lapses, because we're in position to win games in the last 5 minutes, and those are the most critical moments.
We always, when we talk about close games, we always talk about the end of the game. It's a cliche. My business is just awful at cliches. There's not very many big picture people out there. How important is it for them to understand that they can put themselves in a great position, because you can put somebody away in the first half of a game?
Yeah, I mean, that's the teaching tool, to your point right there. You know, for me, for my staff, after losing an overtime game that came down to the last possession or two, you know, a three-pointer that was missed and a foul was called, it's very easy to point to that moment and say that's the reason we lost. But to your point, we come back this morning with the mindset of teaching. We have to learn from the entirety of the game. There was many times throughout the course of our game on Saturday where we had a 14-point lead. We could have taken it to 16 or 18. Right. And transition defense, offensive rebound, or just a poor possession on offense that didn't allow the defense to have to work, you know, to get a stop. And those possessions need to hold the same value for a good team as that last possession.
How do you feel about the rotation right now, the number of minutes you're getting off the bench to then add in with the guys you have there playing the bulk of the minutes?
Yeah, I mean, I feel good. I'm comfortable with the rotation as it's set right now. We have some injuries, so that's forcing some of our starters to play larger minutes. And these injuries are a couple weeks away from getting back on the court. And so that's just kind of is what it is, the next man up type of mentality in our locker room where everyone's got to be ready to play. And I trust everyone, as does our staff, and trust in these guys that they're going to put forth the effort required to be in the game.
Now here's the tough one. How important is it when things aren't quite going right offensively that the players still understand the impact they can have defensively? Because you and I both know with youth, offense affects defense at times.
Yeah, no doubt. Got past that idea actually throughout the course of the non-conference schedule, maybe towards the end, because we didn't win the last three games of our non-conference, and it was not because of our offense, it was because of our defense. They were ugly basketball games. So the message in-house is if we have to win the game 2-0, we win the game 2-0. It's not aesthetically pleasing, and it's not going to draw a sellout. But at the end of the day, you play the games to win them. And I think our group right now is learning that you're not going to make every shot. And that shouldn't be the determining factor as to winning or losing. It certainly does help, for sure.
Yes.
It certainly helps. But the mentality cannot hang on a make versus a miss on the offensive side of things.
I mean, obviously, you've had a couple of guys out. That hasn't helped. What do you need to do now in terms of taking better care of the basketball, right, and thus, you know, and not lose that turnover battle, which can take away possessions?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing really is trusting kind of the middle part of our shot clock, Steve. It's kind of unusual to talk about it like this, but you know, there's the first 10 seconds of the shot clock. It usually is the most movement as it relates to either transition, finding an advantage because of pace of play. Then the gym kind of settles, and you're going to have to make decisions based on your habits, and you're going to have to trust those decisions and movement patterns. So we're at a stage right now where we have to move the ball from one side of the floor to the other to get the defense to shift to then attack. And there are times throughout the course of it really only shows its face in the last 10 minutes of games right now where the ball tends to stick on one side of the floor.
Yeah.
The defense then, in turn, doesn't move and is ready for any action that comes their way. And it just makes the decisions that much tougher, and you have to be that much more exact. So we just had to keep moving the ball, utilizing the fact that we have centers that can really move the ball from one side of the floor, which is an advantage for us. And play with an advantage as opposed to play with the gym that is just at a standstill.
Well, and that's it. I'll use a football analogy here. When you're talking about the middle part of the shot clock, that's equivalent to me of being good on second down, where you're staying away from third down because you're good on second down, or you're setting up third and short because you were good on second down. That middle part of the shot clock can set all sorts of good things in motion if you handle it right.
that's completely accurate. You know, if you if we can get a third and short as opposed to third and long,
yes,
then you're in a much better, you know, over time. Look, it's not going to be perfect, but throughout the course of a 40-minute game, the more that you're inching towards that first down at the end of a second down as opposed to, you know, having to throw a third and 12, then you're in a better spot. I mean, look, it's a great analogy because it's very unlikely that you're on first down having a ridiculously high completion rate. Same for basketball. I mean, yeah, there are teams that play very fast.
Yeah,
they play very fast. They stick to that style. It's a hurry up. In keeping with the football analogy, it's a hurry up brand of football. You just never huddle. But, you know, there's another side to that where you can wear yourself out and give too many possessions to the opponent. So we just have to get better on second and third down, and we're improving in those categories, but we just have to keep improving because we've been up double digits now two games in a row, and we have to finish these games.
Right, and that'll be the key for you. How do you finish the games? Because if you're in a position to be up 10 to 16, whatever it happens to be, you're good enough to finish the game. I mean, I'm sure you've told your team that 1,000 times.
Yeah. I mean, and that just comes down to a little bit of experience. And what I mean by experience when it comes to winning a game when you're up by double digits, a 2-point shot only counts as 2 points.
Right.
When you have been in that moment enough, your poise, your approach allows you to think a 2-pointer is a 2-pointer. But if you haven't been in that situation a lot, 2-pointers can feel like 6-pointers, like emotionally.
Oh, yeah.
They can get the crowd going a little bit, and it can create a little bit of disruption on the offensive end, and you don't want too many of those type of sequences. So you have to limit those sequences and still staying aggressive, be smart with the basketball, and then you have to defend.
Something that I've noticed over the long time of doing this is sometimes the team will get a lead, and you'll have a couple of guys out there with the lead that will take a couple of, like, hey, I'm going to take this shot. Like just play the game, right?
Yeah.
To me, that's the maturity part right there where it comes into play. Like, no, just run the offense. There's a reason why John designed the play. Run it.
Yeah. And I would say that in today's age of basketball, leads are never safe.
That's right.
You see it so often. And a big reason for them never being safe is, quite frankly, the shot clock, the length of possessions have all shortened, the style of play has changed. All it takes is 4 possessions to hit 4 threes, and it's a 12-0 run.
Yep.
And that 18-point lead is now down to 6. So, you know, there is definitely a growth and a learning curve to staying ahead by double digits when you're up double digits in the second half. At the same time, what you see around college basketball, you see it in the NBA actually pretty frequently. Leads are never safe. Teams never quit. And the 3-point line and the pace of play has changed that way in which we've all known of, like, the flex offense, 35 seconds on the shot clock, and just winning by running down the clock.
Yeah. Yeah, that was. I saw Bruce Parkhill run that flex late game over and over and over again when he was here at Penn State, which then brings up your next game, Ed DeCellis and Navy coming in.
Yeah.
What's the just the general feel you have for Ed's teams this year?
No, I mean, they're typical Navy basketball is very physical, fearless, and competitive. And his team mirrors the mission of the Naval Academy.
Right.
They play very hard. They run a lot of different sets to find advantages for their better players, which can be really challenging to prepare for. And, you know, he's been coaching for such a long time. You can just see his teams are very well organized, very well prepared. And offensively, they have a purpose. And those are really hard teams to play against. They have done a nice job. And they're 4-2. They've won 2 in a row, and they just beat Army in a huge Navy Army game. So it'll be a tough challenge for us.
Oh, no question. The late Walter Barr used to say, whenever Penn State played a service academy. He said, Steve, they're preparing for something else compared to what we're preparing our people for. This will be at Soika. Yep, Soika, Wednesday night,
yep.
7 o'clock.
Yep.
John, good luck, and thanks so much for the time again today. Always so thoughtful.
No,
appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it.
John Griffin, the head coach of the Bucknell basketball team. They've got Navy at Soika on Wednesday at 7 o'clock. We will come back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today. Maybe seeing the a moving truck in front of the Suits' house today. That's what happens when you bet it on the Bills. What's he doing? Wait, Todd, I told you to talk to him about this. I don't know.
Well, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Oh, boy, that's so funny. That's quite the visual. All right, yesterday, Ohio State beat Iowa in women's basketball. Kaylin Clark, by the way, had 45 in the game. But because Iowa is right now Iowa and Kaylin Clark is Kaylin Clark, it was a big deal in Columbus, and the fans that they had there, they stormed the court. So essentially, you had a woman running onto the court and Kaylin Clark trying to run off the court, and they collided. He knocked her down, or she knocked her down. Talking about it was, I mean, I think people think it was a guy that knocked her down. It's not, it was a woman that knocked her down. Now, if any other Iowa player had been knocked down, we would not have known about it. Okay? But when the franchise gets knocked down, the whole world now is analyzing the tape over and over again. Okay? Now, we just saw a court storming here at Penn State. And it's when it finally completely happens, it's a fun thing to see. But I'm watching. Okay, you want to know what I was watching for when it was happening? I was watching to make sure the Wisconsin players got out. That literally was what I was watching for as it was going. And then when they got out of that, I was able to appreciate, I mean, you know, seeing the scene happen there as they, you know, Wisconsin was ranked 11th in the country. But my first thought was, I'm looking over at the Wisconsin people, making sure they can get out. Because I remember Mike Krzyzewski complained about this a few years ago. Because, look, Duke could be 16-14 and a team beats Duke and they're going to storm the court. Like, okay, really, they're 16-14. Come on. Really? But that's what they ran into. Duke doesn't lose, you know, especially under Mike. Duke did not lose that often. Okay. I mean, Duke does not lose that often. So, and let's face it, the national championships, the Final Fours, everything. You know, Mike's no longer the coach. Of course, John Shire is. But when Mike was the head coach and he complained about it, I think it was after a Virginia game. He was like, come on, you got to protect our players a little bit when that happens, because he felt like, you know, his players, that at that point they weren't getting enough protection to get out of there. And so this situation happens, and I only saw the video once. I've had people say, I've watched it 10, 15 times. I said, why? I saw it one time. That was good enough. Okay, you know, they collided. You know, Kaylin Clark went down. I think the other woman kept on going. All right, to the center of the floor. Kind of won the battle there a little bit. But it was, know, every time, and she said, and to her credit, Caitlin Clark said all the right things afterwards. She says, yeah, it was scary, justified. Gene Smith, the athletic director, apologized. You know, she explained that. I mean, she handled it beautifully. But it's being made such a big deal today. Because of all people, she got hit and got knocked down. I have not seen a men's player get knocked down in a court storming, but I know it's been difficult for some men's teams to get off the floor during a court storming. And I don't want court storming to go away. Look, I'm getting sick of legislating fun. You know, but there is a limit as to where you go in terms of the space to do it. And I think what they started doing at, like, at Duke games, when they're on the road, is they would come out right away and put a rope up on the handshake line. That way people didn't, at least they didn't think they could violate it. How about that? What do you think about court storming?
I'm kind of torn because I kind of think you have to consider the safety of the players, like you said. But again, I mean, does it get a little ridiculous in the fact that sometimes people storm the court when it doesn't seem deserved? Yes, but I think...
Yeah, I agree.
But I mean, for if you beat the number one team in the country and you're not very good, I don't see what the... You're allowed to have spontaneous moments of excitement.
I mean, are they number one?
No, they're not number one. I didn't mean that they... I just mean if you beat the number one team in the... You know...
Right, sure. Right.
But sometimes, like you said, 16-14 Duke at some point, you know, does that deserve a court storming? Probably not.
It's Duke.
Yeah.
But it said Duke. Yeah, but that's not, like, really Duke. Sean Desai out. Brian Johnson out. Nick Sirianni in.